Welcome to the Daitadalo podcast and this exciting talk we are about to dive into. I am Inga Maria Utsi. I work as the producer of this podcast for Daitadalo and I will be moderating today's talk titled Native Filmscapes. In the 1950s and 1960s, there was this film movement in France called the Nouvelle Vague, the New Wave in English. This wave was said to have been inspired by the Golden Age neorealism in Italy that sparked after the World War II. In this wave, it became important that the everyday life and perhaps more of the societal challenges were represented in film. And the more challenging stories were more important to tell. The new wave, it brought with it a movement that would change the French film world. So the Nouvelle Vague films departed from the known ways of storytelling and they began shaping films that mirrored the diversity of life. So these days, we are hearing a lot of talk about the Sami film wave. And it might, in some levels, be possible to compare to the French past wave. But the Sami film wave, it belongs in the indigenous film world. And it has become the talk of the town because of this sudden boom we are seeing right now, like the growth of the Sami film world. So we are seeing international interest rising. We are seeing Sami films on like the biggest arenas, the biggest film festival programs in the world. And also bigger budgets in our films. And right now, as we are speaking, there are more Sami film projects on the move than ever before. So in this speaking moment, we are actually just finished with attending the Indigenous Film Conference here in Gaudegaino, which was arranged by the Sami Film Institute. So these last few days, we have gotten to experience representatives from global organizations talking about their works here in our little Sami village. And I think this reflects something about the value of Sami film. Now seems to be the time of the art of Sami films. And with me here today, I have three Sami filmmakers who have joined us here to talk about this Sami film wave. So we have Elle-Maria Eira here with us and also Elle-Sofie Sara. And Elle-Maria Tailfeathers. So three LS here with me today. Could you tell us who you are and what do you do?
Mul on Elle-Maria Apiniskim Tailfeathers. Ja mul on Samis, mu ähti da Bjarne Sture Jakobsen. Ja sam ro unjargas. Ja mul on mai erit Canada's. My mother is Esther Tailfeathers or Maguinisgaki in our language. And she and I as well is Blackfoot or Siksigaitadapi or Nitsitapi. And our territory is in now what is known as Alberta and Montana in North America. And I'm a filmmaker and an actor and I'm very tired. The last few days have been so intense, but tired in a good way. Lots of feelings and expressions and thoughts. And I think we're all in the same situation of just like being on this emotional roller coaster of the conference and all of the difficult things that were discussed and all of the exciting things that were discussed. So, yeah.
Definitely. Thank you. And we can move on to Elle-Maria.
Yes. Hi, I'm Elle-Maria Eira. I'm from Gaudegaino, where we are now. And I belong to the reindeer herding district 26, Lakonjarga, I'm a film director, artist, musician. Yeah, I do a lot of things. Yeah, but the last years I've been mostly working with film.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Elle Maria. And now Elle Sofe,
yeah.
Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah. I'm Elle Sofe Sara, and I am, it's always hard to define yourself. I'm a choreographer and director and also a mother. And yeah, I work with film and also dance and performance. And yeah, lately music and yoik has also been a very big part of my what I do or my expression in some way. Yeah.
Thank you. And I want to go like to the beginning, and I want to look into your heads. Why film? Why have you chosen the film as your medium? And kind of maybe what kind of stories did you want to tell that inspired you to start in the first place? Should we start with Elle Maria?
Okay. I grew up, I spent the first like 6 years of my life in Sápmi in Karasjoka. And I think what's so remarkable about this place, well, there's many things that are really remarkable, but I think what sort of planted the seed for film and performance and theater was my exposure to Ofalash, the film by Nils Gope, that the fact that we had this Sami film come, I'm 38 now, so the film came out when I was maybe 2 years old. And so it was such a big part of my childhood, Ofalash, to see this film and to see Sami representation on screen and to understand the language and to see our people represented in a positive, heroic light, I think is a really important thing for a child to see. And then we had Manateve, we had children's television, there were programs in the Sami language, but also we had Bjaivash, Sami National Theater. And I just remember seeing these plays that were so exciting and thrilling, and to hear our language on the stage, I think planted a really important seed for me and probably a lot of people to around here to know that our stories and our language had value and that it was possible to express in that way. As a Blackfoot person, as an Indigenous person to North America, it was very different. We didn't really have that sort of narrative sovereignty in the sense that representations of us on screen and stage weren't, more often than not, weren't coming from our own people. So, you know, I saw like Dances with Wolves, I think for my 7th birthday or something, I insisted that my birthday party be Dances with Wolves and we go and see the film, which is so depressing. Yeah, so we had like Dances with Wolves, which was obviously directed by a white man. And, you know, I didn't have this sort of exposure or opportunity to connect with representation in that way with that side of my culture. And so I think just having exposure to Ofalash and Bjaivash and just to see sort of the what came out of like our generation, what we got to witness as children is like really, really special. Mm-hmm. So I think it's always important to remind myself of that. And I think that that's probably what planted the seed for wanting to do theater and later film and just to tell stories and to see the power and feel the power of story. So eventually I became an actor and then found my way into making films because I felt so frustrated with the industry as an Indigenous woman, as a racialized woman in North America, and knowing that no matter what, I would be stuck in these sort of like stereotypical and problematic representations of Indigenous women on screen. So I decided to sort of step into the role of trying to make my own films. And so from there, I've like found my way into doing it all and collaborating in really beautiful ways. So that's how it all happened.
Hmm. Yeah. It's a lot there. A lot of inspirations, of course. And I guess it will probably be something in the same lines for you. Or what inspired you into starting?
I was thinking about that. It's like, what? What was it? I also grew up, like Goldegaino is the neighbor village for Karasjokka. And like the Sami National Theatre Beivash, we always saw their performances at school. But I think for me, there was like in my teens, I don't know if I was 13, 14, but we had this project at school where one film guy came and we should make a film and I don't know. Yeah. And we were divided into groups and that was so, it suited me so good. And I think for the first time I really felt like, wow, I this makes sense to me to work like this, to collaborate and to kind of lead a group I think that was kind of the first spark, actually, because I felt that I was it was something that was natural for me to do, and that I hadn't really found anything before that. Like I hadn't really found my place at school or like found any interests, because mostly there was skiing or football. and that wasn't really my thing. So I also then continued to think that I would be an actor. But then in pursuing that, I also met dance and a really great dance teacher that inspired me to take education in dance and to pursue that. And I think people always ask me, were you going to be a dancer? And back then I don't think I thought about anything. I just thought, this is so fun. This is great. But when I look back, I always had this creative spark and always wanted to do my own things and to choose music or to lead the others to bring my ideas and try to create it. So I think that's where it started.
Okay, so always really been a director in your life also.
Well, I think it was in that that I found out that, oh, it's a thing. I felt I found my place, kind of, or skills, my skills that I hadn't been able to use in any other situation before.
I think that's really an important perspective for our little societies, because we often don't really have the cultural the possibilities to explore different activities in culture and things like that. We don't have fancy art schools here in Goldegaino, so it's this one course brought you this inspiration to carry on to pursue a career in film. That's really great. That's actually possible with one course. What about you, Ella Maria?
I grew up in Maden, and for me it was like Ella Sofa said, I didn't like skiing or football. And we didn't have that much to do there either for the youths and kids. But I think my mom inspired me to become a filmmaker, because she had always a film camera at home, and she used to film us almost every day, all the time. And then one day I grabbed her camera and I asked her, can I try this? Can I film? Yes, you can, she said, but never, like, do not film, use a tape where it is film already. Okay, then I didn't do that. I did that one time. And I destroyed a really beautiful film, which my mom has filmed in 1989, reindeer racing in Madze. So, yeah, and then I just started to film. And I was filming, and I think I've made feature films and commercials and TV series and children's TV. And I was directing my cousins, my friends, and my younger sisters, forcing them sometimes. I've seen a movie like where I see my sister is almost crying. I don't want to do it one more time. And I was like, yeah, one more time. And actually, I also wanted to be in the front of camera. And sometimes I asked my cousin, can you film me? And then I just, no, don't film like that. So I was directing. And then later, when I grew up, when I was a grown up person, then I think for me it was like I had an urge to tell stories untold stories, which you maybe never have seen before or heard about it or things people do not talk about it. So, in the beginning, I filmed a lot like while we were herding our reindeer, and that's what I've been doing for the last almost 15 years now, telling different stories from our reindeer herding family. And they are so personally for me, and also we've been in court many times fighting against power lines and so on, and yeah, different kind of court cases. I remember when I was a kid, like when I discovered that people do not know almost nothing about the Samis or the reindeer herding. Mm. And I could just only read on the newspapers. It was like back in the days, people could like write comments there, and they were very ugly comments. The last page at the Finnmark Dabla. I remember that. And also everything you read about the reindeer herding in the newspapers weren't good. And I got so sad and so angry. That's why I decided to make films about reindeer herding, for example. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So for you also, it's about representation of your culture and your perspective and seeing those stories that you are living on the screen.
Yes, but I also was a member. I was a member of a film club, so I got one VH as a film every month. So yeah, I watched a lot of movies because I like to escape into another world sometimes.
So I was thinking, because we've already mentioned the Sami film wave, right? And it didn't come from nothing. You mentioned Offerlösch. It's the first Sami feature film actually directed by a Sami person, not from somebody from the outside, but a story within. So how do you see it, this Sami wave we're speaking about? Do you have any reflections about that term? Or you have all been working in the field also for a while now, so I guess you have seen some of the development, both personally and professionally. So I would just like to hear what your thoughts are on that. Should we start with Elisa for this time?
Yeah. I'm thinking what to say. I also feel like Elmaya, like these 2 days in the film conference has just been really intense, but in an inspiring way. I feel empowered, and I, especially for me, like hearing like these best case studies or best case, what do you call it? Scenarios from film productions, indigenous film productions, is really like inspiring. I feel like, wow, there are people doing things differently in the film world, and they are succeeding. And I feel like it's really great. Yeah, and the Sami film wave, I think it's really exciting. Like next year, there are the two TV series, Sami TV series, filming, and also I'm shooting my feature, and it's all happening at the same time. So there will be some challenges with crew, maybe, but I just think it's amazing, and that Elle Maria has filmed her film this year, and also Egil Pedersen. There's like loads going on, but also one like concern, or I don't know, thought from me is that we also need continuity. Like, I hope that there will not be, that it has to be like 10 years or 15 years before I get to make my second movie, or someone else gets to produce another series, because there are so many stories to tell, and that I hope that also the financing structure and the distribution and everything like that, that it's not just a wave, but it's like that's something we can build from. Like, it can happen, like we can build our competence more faster, or like we can build it, that we don't have to wait several years for the next opportunity, but that there is actually many things going on for, I don't know, many years now, that it will, like, a wave is always
going like, down.
Yeah, like,
you want it to be a spark instead.
It should be like, common fire that will burn.
And also, I know you have some thoughts about this support system that should come into place to actually meet the demands and meet the projects that are now being created. And we have a lot of directors and also maybe writers, more than maybe we have. I've been working with casting myself, and it's a real challenge in Sami, because we don't really have that many actors, and not enough to make this many films, at least. So we need to educate people as well. But before we let go of the wave, I want to hear the two other perspectives on it as well. So Elle Maja, what do you have any reflections about the Sami film wave?
Well, I think this new fire, this new Sami film fire, is like just a reflection of the global indigenous film movement that has been happening for quite some time now. And I think it's a really beautiful thing, the way that our communities and nations have leaned on each other and found ways to be resourceful together, and have found ways to build new pathways and collaborate, and also just resist and push back against these colonial states that refuse to stand with us as partners on equal footing. So in Canada, we have the Imaginative Film Festival, and it's just such an important part of our community, because it, you know, it supports young filmmakers, it celebrates the work of filmmakers from all over the world, Indigenous filmmakers from all over the world. And it's a place where we can gather every year and celebrate our work, and also just build bridges and, you know, take political action as well. And I think from that global community has come like the International Sami Film Institute, and in Canada we have the Indigenous Screen Office. So we have these advocacy organizations that have been pivotal in terms of lobbying those who have the funds and who have the power to let us stand on equal footing as them, and recognize the value of our stories. And so, you know, for me, the International Sami Film Institute has supported so many of my films, and I'm so lucky to have come of age as a filmmaker as the Film Institute has grown and to be able to witness the ways that this place continues to grow and the ways that our community grows and the ways that people like Anna Laila and Lisa Holmberg are able to advocate for us to get equity and access to the resources we need to be able to tell these stories that have an audience. You know, I think what we're also seeing is that there is a real hunger for Indigenous stories that is reaches beyond just our own people, that there's a global community of people who are interested in seeing Indigenous films made by Indigenous filmmakers. So I think it's just part of this whole bigger global movement. And it's like so exciting to see, especially now that there's like this new generation of younger filmmakers who are like so brave and are just willing to like, you know, fuck gender norms and all and the patriarchy and just like speak truth to power. And I'm just so inspired by them and their willingness to just like be so outspoken and brave and also like find fun and joy in the work as well.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it's an exciting time right now in the film world, in the whole global Indigenous context, really. What about you, Elmer?
You just said everything I wanted to say. That the world, I think the world is so hungry to see Indigenous stories, untold stories. And I'm so happy also that, like you said, we have the International Sami Film Institute who has always been supporting us, even though if it's not a wave or not. And that makes me also like want to continue making films, because it has been hard, and I used to produce my own films before, so like I think most of us had to learn to do everything, so like produce and write and direct and sometimes organize the other things or whatever. So, and also all of the festivals we have, like Imaginative, I've been there 2 times. It's an amazing festival, and also Skamagovat Sami Film Festival, and yeah. So the wave, you said everything, and you also. I'm just a summer, just a summary from me now. I'm sitting with this too clever woman here.
But we can move on, like not that far away from the wave, actually, because Elmaria, you have. Just wrapped your big, maybe one of the biggest Sami feature films. Maybe it is the biggest in terms of budget, and also because it's such a big international actor, Netflix, who is the main producer of your film. I know you can't really speak that much about it, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about your experience working with it.
Yeah, it's a book called Stolen, written by a Sami author, Ann-Helene Lastadius, and she's from Sohbar, from the Swedish side of Sami. And it is a story about Elsa, who is a young woman who struggles to defend her indigenous heritage in a world where xenophobia is on the rise. We have the climate changes threatening our reindeer herding, and also young people who choose suicide in the face of collective desperation. So yeah, that's a short. So my experience as well, I was listening to Elmaria today. You told your experiences while you've been making films in Canada, and I could recognize myself, because I have also had some struggles. Like, you know, I wanted to have as many Sami people on board on this project, especially in every department, because we were shooting in Sápmi, our home, and the main language is Sami, and the Sami culture and reindeer herding. So it was so important to me to have Sami people there who have the knowledge, who knows what is it about actually, and how to deal with things, and to understand the language, the clothing, and reindeers and everything. So, and I had to do like you, I had like a talk and a kind of a workshop for the rest who came, for the, all of these Swedish people who came who were not Sami, like to tell basic things about us, the Sami, our, about our history and words, which you should not use because we've experienced, like, people were saying weird things because of lack of knowledge. And yeah, I just had to tell also how to, what kind of clothing they should wear, because we're going to film outdoor, far away from the civilization, in the middle of the coldest period here in winter. We had like most of the days around 30 minus, sometimes 37 minus. And a lot of snow. It's much more snow in the Swedish side of Sápmi than here in Gotgatno. And also, we had a lot of animals. And yeah, so it was challenging. And where was I now? I'm also tired.
You were speaking a bit about like the cultural differences with, I guess, with having a crew from the majority society. So probably you're also interested in speaking about this recruitment issue that we have now that we have this high demand.
And for me also, it was so important. Like every time you went to a new place, we had to like ask for permission, and everyone had to do that. And we were also, we built something out there and we had this ceremony where everyone had to ask for permission and wish that everything goes well. So it's also, I don't think the Swedish who are not Sami, non-Sami, I don't think they think that way as we do.
Yeah, about asking permission from the land.
From the land, yeah, and the area, the place. And there was also a mountain where we were filming a lot. And I felt like it's something special with that mountain. Me and my photographer were talking about that. He's also Sami, Ken Arabongo, from Gotgatno. And then I asked, I met a local guy there and asked, what is this? What's the name of the man? What is this? And he said, he's like a sacred mountain. So we just felt that. So, yeah, so we need more Sami film workers in different departments. But for me, well, it was also important to have local people there who know all about the area and also how to drive with a snowmobile. And I think the Samis are much, way much, they work faster and they're more creative, fix things. Yeah.
Well trained in flexibility.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have, it's really exciting with this new Netflix film upcoming. Maria's film, but I know you have other projects as well going on, but we can come back to that a little bit later. Thank you for telling us the little you can at this point. Elisabeth, you also actually are working on a feature film right now, in which maybe in this film the two parts of your artistic career are meeting in a way with your well, you often do use your knowledge in choreography in your films as well, but could you tell us a little bit about this project?
Yeah, I didn't like prepare. Yeah, it's a Joik musical, so but it's a feature film, it's a drama, but they like burst into Joik sometimes and also some dancing. Or movement choreography. Yeah, and the subject is abuse or double abuse, both sexual abuse and land abuse. So I'm trying to weave those two themes. I feel it's a very like current story. And a situation that many Sami people, my own community, but also many indigenous community are in, that you are in this huge fights, both land rights for your own land rights, but also this fights that are in the homes. So it's about that and the silence or the taboo or the dilemmas around that, to both be so dependent on family and like have this love for the land and your family, but at the same time there is unhealthy relationships. Yeah, but it's a musical, so it's hopeful also. And yeah, and I think really the music and the yoiking is like empowering and hopeful. So it's very important also that for me that it's not, that there is hope, because we are living in these situations currently. So yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's also, I guess, the kind of the same thematic landscape as in Elmaria's film Stolen. As you said, there's this exploitations of land and that brings also societal challenges internally as well. So I think it's really, really interesting, and very interesting that you are doing a musical. I think it will be the first Sami musical.
At least that film.
Yeah,
there have been theater musicals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's. I have been doing like choreography in film. Mm-hmm. That's my. I don't know. I really enjoy it, and I think like this body. Yeah, like to. I don't know, carry your body or to move also in a Sami context is very limited, I think. We are very maybe colonized in that way. And I think like that's also some part of my project. And also in terms of yoik, trying to work with yoik in different way in that film, and to like... both to show how it is, but also maybe how maybe it has been or maybe it can be in the future, you know, how to, I don't know, use yoik is not the right way to say it, but how yoik can be a part of a situation. Yeah, I think it's interesting in that way also. I'm trying to like see that tradition in a... to dig it in a little bit different way and maybe make our own thing.
Yeah. I also think that's so interesting. And I would love to talk more about that, using yoik in a musical form and the historic use of yoik and how you can compare those two. It's really interesting. We are going to move on to Elle-Maja. You have a foot in both Sami and also in Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about the latest project? Because you have also been a part of big projects lately, having the main role in some big features and also doing TV series for like Amazon Prime and everything like this. It's also huge projects. Maybe just tell us a bit about that and your experience in working with this kind of projects.
I've spent a lot of time in the television world lately. I think it's kind of a move that's happening everywhere. A lot of people are consuming television more than they are film. I had this opportunity, which was very strange, and I still feel very conflicted about it, which was to act in an Amazon Prime series called Three Pines, which is a cop series. And as an Indigenous person from Canada and from here, we have a very complicated relationship with the police. And, you know, in Canada, Indigenous people are murdered by police officers all the time. It's a very violent system. It was created to police us and control us and keep us on reservations. And so I had, I felt very conflicted about playing an Indigenous police officer on this big platform. But the show came from creators, non-Indigenous creators, who wanted to explore Indigenous themes that are really important on a global stage. And so I thought about that, like, okay, if I play a cop, am I like compromising my integrity and my beliefs as, you know, an Indigenous person who has very strong beliefs about the police and I'm, you know, not unique. And I realized that there's an opportunity to work on this show and learn how a massive show like that operates and to witness directors' work. So when I'm acting, generally, it's also an opportunity for me to learn how to direct, because I didn't go to film school to formally learn how to make films. So everything I know is just from watching and learning and working with others and being on film sets. And I think that's true for a lot of us. And so it was also an opportunity for me to be on this like big television set and watch how these people work and how it operates. And there was one Indigenous director on that show. Her name's Tracy Deer. She's Mohawk and she's very respected and accomplished filmmaker. And so for me, it was such a profound experience to like be on this massive set and then to see this Indigenous woman directing two episodes that were really difficult. They were about the Indian residential school system in Canada and that legacy. And to see this Indigenous woman, you know, commanding this big set for Amazon was like a really profound thing to witness and to be part of. And so I'm really grateful I took that opportunity. I still feel complicated about like promoting police. I don't think the show necessarily promotes police. It's just like doesn't dive deep enough into how problematic and violent policing is for people of color and Indigenous people. But the second sort of television thing that I've had the opportunity to do in the last year was directing the first three episodes of a show called Little Bird, which is about the 60s scoop in Canada. So in the 1960s, when they kind of started to close the residential schools, this systematic policy came into place where Indigenous children were taken from families and communities and placed in white foster homes and adopted out into white families. Many were sent to the United States, and this is an ongoing thing. So in the province of Manitoba, where we shot Little Bird, today Indigenous children make up over 90% of children in foster care. So it's this ongoing issue, and it has deep ramifications for our communities, for our families, for our culture, for our sovereignty, everything. And so this was the first time that an Indigenous-led series was given the type of budget that we had to work with. It still wasn't enough. You know, we really had to be creative and find ways to make it work. But it was really special to be part of the show where one of the creators was Indigenous, where both directors were Indigenous, one of the key writers was Indigenous, and then many of our key creative team and technicians were Indigenous. And it set a very different tone. But it was also this like massive responsibility. And I remember having this sort of fight or argument. It's like we always have to fight. It's just part of the job and the work and existing as an Indigenous person in this world. But I remember having this difficult conversation with the non-Indigenous producers who I don't think understand the sort of responsibility that we have every time we are the first to do something. Because, you know, the way that racist ideologies work is that if we fail at something, if one of us fails at something, that means they're never going to trust anybody else to do that thing. And so I remember telling them, like, listen, you really need to give us what we need to make this and meet your expectations. Otherwise, you're setting us up for failure. And if we fail, that means these broadcasters, these streamers, these funders are never going to trust another Indigenous production to make something like this with the type of resources that we have. And so it was this huge sort of burden of responsibility to know that, like, as Indigenous people, there's this additional burden for us to always like have to excel and do better to just to prove that we're deserving of equality. And that's something, you know, we all face in this industry as filmmakers. So it was like a huge responsibility, but it was also done in such a beautiful way because we had so many Indigenous people in key technical departments and key creative departments in positions of power, because we were able to lean on each other in these difficult moments and to consistently try and infuse our process in making the show with Indigenous sort of ways of relating to each other and working together and trying to sort of instill our values of respect and care and empathy into all of the work. So it was a really special experience, and now the show is out in the world and it's doing really well. Like it's one of the most successful, like highest viewed Canadian shows in history. And so that's really important to know that, like, this thing that we made and had to work so hard to make is now doing well with a broad audience. And so it's kind of this like huge relief, like, oh, okay, thank God, like, yeah, we did okay. So hopefully they'll trust the next production that comes along. So yeah, it's a really complicated thing to, like, you know, consistently have to navigate the complexities of, like, racist ideologies that infuse the way that we're perceived on every level, and the way that we have to operate within these industries that are inherently designed to keep us out. You know, these spaces weren't made for us, and so we have to find ways to, like, navigate and circumvent and resist and make space, and then now, you know, build our own spaces. And I think we've talked a lot about that in the last couple of days, is like, how do we build a new way of working? How do we create spaces that are just our own? I think there was a really important question earlier today that I heard Emil, the Greenlandic producer, ask. There's kind of like this, like, guy from LA who gave a really nice speech, and it's really important that we're building these bridges. And, you know, he said something about, like, how it's so hard for us to get a seat at the table, but how we know it's so important to have a seat at the table. But then Emil asked, do we even want a seat at the table? Which is such an important thing to say. Like, do we actually want to operate within these structures, or can we imagine a world otherwise where we're working in a completely new way, where we have our own table with equitable resources and don't have to operate within these, like, oppressive Western ways of working and creating art and film?
Mm. We were also discussing, like, what is a Sami structure, for example? We are following now the Western structure. And I started to think about the Sami film on this film set. How should it be, maybe? Because sometimes I feel like it doesn't fit us quite. Like, we were shooting during this summer, and I wanted to film in the middle of the night, but I wasn't allowed to do that. And and also about the time and clock. We, for us, especially when you are with the reindeer herd, we don't follow the clock. What is important for us is the reindeer, the weather is. You can't plan, like, okay, at 1 o'clock we start, reindeer herd has to be here, and then we start to film. So it would be interesting to discuss, like, more about the Indigenous way of thinking and what is the Indigenous structure on a film set during a production. Maybe we should start to collaborate even more. Okay, instead of asking a Norwegian, for example, someone like sound guy, I can ask an Indigenous.
Yeah, it's been, we talked about that also in one of the groups that I was in, about this. I think from Danis, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, but also like practices that you guys had in Night Raiders. And I just felt it's really like also hearing you about asking for permission and things that I have done also in my projects, that it's, I feel like... Like right now, we're shooting next year, and now is the budget cuts, and now is all the hard decisions, and the producers against the director. And I feel like it's really important that we have these terms. Like, I think Dani said, like, cultural competence. They had the elders there to support the younger actor, or things like that. And I just felt like, yeah, I need to use these terms, you know, now that I'm going to this meeting, because maybe as an indigenous or I really feel that I have to fight also to get that understanding that this is important. This is really important. Like, I know that it takes more time or costs more money or, yeah, like, but I feel also, like you say, Elmaria, that we should, share also this kind of the indigenous way or the indigenized the cinema or the filmmaking, that there is certain customs or ways of thinking to, also this kind of healing aspect or taking care of the people that, I can feel that the film industry, like, it's really fast paced and it's not for humans almost, like, being an indigenous and dealing with difficult topics, that you are also, you have the trauma and all the people, you, your family, like, it's not only, like, it's not only a subject for many of us, but it's actually our life mm-hmm. and current situation. So it's mm-hmm. I think it's really important to think about those human aspects, and that they are actually important in the film industry, because we will make better films if we feel safe and if mm-hmm. we feel nourished in those ways mm-hmm. yeah mm-hmm. In the film spaces also mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay, so we have to close up this great conversation. Thank you so much for participating. And just really quickly, like, one phrase, what's next for you?
I'm moving, doing some more television stuff and hopefully another feature. Everything's kind of in development and writing, but I'm moving into this space of like creating stories about love and intimacy and sex and joy. And it feels really nice after like making so many hard difficult subjects. It's like, oh my god, I've had to do so much therapy, but it's been good. Moving into like stories that are also queer, like queer love stories, and exploring like new ground in terms of the being able to have the freedom to tell stories that like bring a sense of joy and explore love and intimacy and all of those things.
Okay. Exciting. We like that. What about you, Ella Maria?
Well, I'm just focusing on finishing my film, so I'm totally in Stone universe right now. I actually almost doesn't have time to be here, but I had to go home and had to be here. And yeah, I have maybe some new requests that I have to decide and think, and yeah. Most important for me is like if it feels right for me and the story is coming from your heart.
I'm thinking very much about my feature film. Yeah, of course. I have some other productions as well to think about. And I will still work combined performance and film world. So I have some performances also that I work with.
Na, ologito, thank you.
Ologito.
You have listened to the Daitodalo podcast, a podcast produced by Daitodalo. A special thanks to our guests for having these conversations and for allowing us to publish them. Editing, sound design, and theme music by Antoni Hatta. This podcast is funded by Kulturdirektoratet and the Fritt Ord Foundation. You can read more about the podcast on our webpage, www.daitodalo.com.